From WKAR's Studio S at Michigan State University, this is Current Sports.
Hey, what is up, beautiful people? Yes, it was a tough weekend. And I'm sure many of you are still licking the wounds as we speak, as Michigan State fell below expectations, losing to Ohio State on Saturday. Boy, oh boy, was that a tough one to watch. Tough one to watch, folks. Of course, we will have all of the post-game discussion you can handle concerning the Spartans' loss to the Buckeyes, and we'll be taking your calls throughout the entire hour. But on the bright note, how about those Lions, huh? Oh, my goodness. The comeback kids just keep on keeping on. What a game against the Dolphins. What a drive by Matthew Stafford and that offense to close out things. Man, yeah, we'll talk about the Honolulu Blue in just a sec. We'll also have weekend winners, chat about the MSU women's basketball team opening up the exhibition season, I guess, on a positive note, and so much more, folks. But before we get to all of that, here's Jock DeWitt with the Current Sports Quick Hit Headliners.
This is Jack DeWitt here to bring you the Current Sports Quick Hit Headliners for Monday, November 10. After falling 49-37 to Ohio State on Saturday night, the Spartans football team is currently ranked 12th in both the USA Today Coaches Poll and the AP Poll. Michigan State has just three games remaining on their schedule, all against above 500 opponents. Mississippi State, Florida State, Oregon, and Alabama round out the top four. The Lady Spartans topped the Grand Valley State Lakers 70-51 Sunday afternoon. All five starters posted double figures in points for MSU, with redshirt sophomore Ariel Powers scoring a team-high 20 points and adding 10 rebounds and 5 assists. The Spartans will take on Eastern Michigan at home next Sunday at 2 o'clock. The Spartans volleyball team lost three straight sets to Wisconsin yesterday afternoon. This is the second straight contest the Spartans have dropped, putting them at 13-12 on the season and 6-8 in conference play. The University of Michigan's men's basketball team will take on Wayne State tonight at 7 o'clock. Coming off an appearance in the Elite Eight last season, the Wolverines will look to replace first-round picks Nick Stauskas and Mitch McGarry. Preseason All-Big Ten selection Karis LeVert is expected to be a huge contributor for the Wolverines this season. The Lions completed their third consecutive fourth-quarter comeback on Sunday, edging the Dolphins 20-16. With 29 seconds left in the game, Matthew Stafford found Theo Riddick on an 11-yard touchdown pass to put the Lions on top for good. Kelvin Johnson and Golden Tate surpassed 100 receiving yards in yesterday's matchup. The now 8-1 Cardinals fear that starting quarterback Carson Palmer may have suffered a torn ACL in their 31-14 win over the Rams. Palmer signed a $50 million contract extension earlier this week. The team will now turn to former Detroit Lion and Michigan State Spartan Drew Stanton, who replaced Palmer yesterday, going 3-for-5 with 85 yards and a touchdown. The Cardinals will take on the Lions this Sunday at 4:25 in Arizona. The Detroit Red Wings fell 4-3 to the Tampa Bay Lightning after losing in the shootout. Ryan Callahan had the lone goal for the Lightning in the shootout. Gustav Nyquist scored his team-high 8th goal of the season, which tied the game at 3 in the third period. The Red Wings are now 0-3 in shootouts this season. The Detroit Pistons fell to 2-4 on the season after losing the Utah Jazz Sunday night 97-96. After leading by as many as 9 points in the fourth quarter, the Jazz fought back and held off the Pistons. Brandon Jennings had a chance to win the game, but missed a 9-foot shot with seconds left. Detroit will take on the Chicago Bulls tonight at 8 o'clock. The former Spartan recruit and Castech football star Jayru Campbell pled guilty to a misdemeanor domestic violence charge after he allegedly assaulted his girlfriend in September at the high school. According to the prosecutor's office, Campbell will be sentenced on December 12. And those are your Current Sports Quick Hit Headliners. Let's send it back to Kendrick Lamar's biggest fan, Al Martin.
It's been a two-headed horse race all year in the Big Ten. Those two thoroughbreds meeting right here on this field tonight. And in just about every newspaper, radio show, or television show you looked at, MSU was the favorite. But as Mama always said, don't believe everything you read, unless it's the scoreboard.
Our kids practiced well all week. We had three good practices, and they were better than our scout team offense, put it that way. And I think they played their best. They came in for revenge, and then they got it.
Very easy to coach, be the head coach up here after a win. Everybody's happy with you. But how you respond after the fact is to me sometimes more important. How we grow on every experience is just as critical.
I mean, it was a big opportunity for us, but there's still some goals out there that we can attain. And we're just going to preach that, Don't let this loss linger over or anything like that.
Can you briefly talk about JT Barrett? What makes that guy such a special player?
JT Barrett is a special quarterback. As you can see, he's big as all get out and can run like the wind. So, he's a great player, and, they got great players on their team. And, that's what happens in big games. People make plays, and both teams make plays. And, they just made a couple more plays than we did tonight.
He's efficient out there. He was throwing the ball short. He threw the ball deep. He can throw the ball on the run. He can run the ball when he wanted to, when he had the chance. He was a real consistent quarterback out there.
You better get back to doing what you're supposed to do and, better reaffirm yourself. And can't feel sorry for yourself. There's no question about that. You just have to keep pushing through.
Do you remember that image from last year's Big Ten Championship? Michigan State proving victorious over Ohio State, and Ohio State head coach Urban Meyer eating pizza in dismay after the loss. Well, the tides have certainly now turned, and Michigan State finds itself competing for something other than a national championship. But we have to wonder how well that sits on the stomach. I'm Al Martin here in East Lansing for WKAR's Current Sports.
Yeah, folks. Oh, boy. Again, as my post-game report after the dust had settled and Michigan State had fallen to the Buckeyes. Again, you can catch that report. If you want to view that report, it is on WKAR.org right now as we speak. Oh, my goodness, folks. As the report talked about, I mean, we went on this show and throughout the entire week, I don't think we got one individual, not one caller, not one Facebook post. Not one tweet, not even one conversation in my life, at least, away from the Current Sports, where someone weighed in and said, yeah, I think Ohio State's going to win this game. I don't know anybody that chose Ohio State. Maybe you do. Maybe you knew somebody that's from Columbus. I even did a spot with NPR with WOSU, which is a public radio station out in Columbus, Ohio. They called me up and they had me as a guest on their radio show earlier in the week. Last week, and just to kind of break down the game, talk about from a Michigan State perspective what the Spartans are bringing to the table, my thoughts on it, my predictions on it, and even the guys there in Columbus, they as I'm talking with them on the air, they're like, yeah, the Spartans are probably going to win this game. They had no faith in the Buckeyes, and these are guys from Columbus, Ohio. We're talking about. It just shows you how sports are funny sometimes. This is why you play the game. This is why you play the game. This is why. At the start of a game, these two teams are pitted against one another to separate, to see if all the hype is lived up to with the Spartans and to see if the Buckeyes could banish that hype. And they certainly did that and more. You got to give hats off to what Ohio State did. I think this story should be more about how the Buckeyes beat the Spartans rather than how Michigan State lost. And, when you look at it, there are a bunch of angles we're going to attack this game from and break it down at. And I encourage you all to call in and give your thoughts on it. What did you think of Michigan State's loss? How surprising was it for you? And what do you think they could have done better to win that game? 517-355-9527, 517-355-9527. Such a weird mood now because on the brink of this game, if Michigan State had beaten Ohio State, Michigan State definitely would have been in heavy, heavy talks about making a legitimate case to play in that 4-team playoff. Now those hopes are gone, folks. We got to face reality here. Michigan State has no shot at the playoff now, and they're playing for a top-tier bowl appearance, if that. That's what they're playing for now. The goals have now shifted, and it's hard to sort of as a player to come to grips with that, knowing that you basically had the world at your feet prior to Saturday night. I mean, just imagine the storyline and the mood that this show in particular would feel right now if Michigan State would have won that game. But woulda, coulda, shoulda. That's all in the past now. And I feel as though this Spartan team was exposed in a few areas on Saturday night. And you got to, again, you got to tip your hat off to Urban Meyer, his coaching staff, and that team, because they came in not even listening to the hype. They came in like, yeah, we're top dog in the Big Ten, and we're going to show you why. I guess to sort of dissect this game, I guess I'll start with the glaring problem that I saw on Saturday night. That Michigan State defense, I think it's safe to say, and I think it's safe to solidify now, that this Michigan State defense is good. It is good. Don't get me wrong. This is a defense that, coming into Saturday night's game, is nationally acclaimed. One of the top defenses in the nation, statistically. Fifth, I believe, in the rankings. But it solidifies that this defense is good, but I doubt if they're great, folks. They're not great. Michigan State's defense is a defense. When dissecting it, looking at that defensive line, is fantastic. I love Shalik Calhoun, Marcus Rush, and those guys. I mean, they do an outstanding job up front and getting to the quarterback. But that's something that they were not able to do on Sunday night. Earlier, they did. If you remember that first quarter, they put a little pressure on JT Barrett, and you know, there some adjustments had to be made. But it's almost like that Ohio State offensive line sort of woke up. Ezekiel Elliott was able to find holes here and there for him to break out and have some big gains. Then JT Barrett as well. What I love about JT Barrett, first off, I mean, yeah, that may have been a redshirt freshman we saw on Saturday night, but he played like a veteran, folks. He played like a senior. JT Barrett is the real deal. And I have to totally agree with Tawan Jones now. Looking at it, yeah, this kid is definitely better than Braxton Miller. He's so versatile. The way he reads the defense, the way he picks and chooses his spots, he's just so poised. So poised and always under control. Nothing rattles this kid at all. JT Barrett was fantastic. And then, you know, I had to do a double take when I went into the press conference room and got handed the halftime stats. At the half, this kid was 10 for 17 for 232 yards and two touchdowns. That's at halftime, folks. At the half. They couldn't stop him. MSU's defense could not stop him. And it kind of puts perspective how this defense, when looking at two of the more versatile QBs in all of college football, and JT Barrett, and going even back to the Oregon game and Marcus Mariota, Michigan State's defense has trouble against versatile quarterbacks. Point blank, period. Quarterbacks, they can not only burn you with their arm, but can torch you with their legs as well. Man, JT Barrett, my goodness. I mean, he had me turning my head and shaking my head like, my goodness, is this kid good? The kid was a man on Saturday night, folks. And even how about Devin Smith, too? A player who certainly played with a chip on his shoulder. Prior to that Michigan State game, Devin Smith hadn't really had any big games. But he showed up on Saturday night, and Barrett found him a few times, multiple times actually, throughout that entire game. Wide receiver Devin Smith was awesome. He had 129 yards and one touchdown. But again, that defense was certainly targeted multiple times throughout that game by Ohio State. That Michigan State secondary, a secondary that, again, even prior to this Ohio State game, has had its share of blunders. We've seen the secondary get beat. We've seen the linebackers look confused. We've seen mishaps from this team prior to this Ohio State matchup. But against an Ohio State team with this, you know, with the season going on, with this game being near the end of the year, you know, you just thought that those wrinkles had been sort of ironed out, especially looking at that Michigan game. I thought so, at least. You guys heard my prediction before this game. But there are still problems with this defense. Darian Hicks was targeted a few times. I remember I ran into Alex at halftime right before he went out to shoot the second half.
And, you know, it's kind of hard sometimes. When you're on the field shooting the game, it's a totally different perspective than when you're at home watching it and have the luxury of replay and hearing commentators go back and sort of analyze different moment-by-moment, play-by-play. And, you know, on a few plays, Darian Hicks, I couldn't tell if it was Hicks because of the angle where I was shooting, but it looked as though Ohio State was targeting Darian Hicks in the middle of that defense. Of course, Darian had a few missed tackles, a few blown coverages, and with Darian now, you know, acclimating into a new role this year in that position on the defense, he just did not seem comfortable. And Ohio State tasted blood in the water, and they went after him. They certainly went after him. The key moment, though, when you sort of felt the air being let out of Spartan Stadium, key moment came with 3:30 left in that second quarter, folks. Now, if you remember, Michigan State's Jeremy Langford, who, by the way, had one impressive game. Jeremy Langford has scored on a touchdown to ideally put Michigan State up by two scores. There was jubilation going on in the stands. But all of a sudden, there was a flag on the field, and that flag was on Jack Allen. Jack Allen had been called for holding. So now Michigan State went from jubilation, celebrating a two-touchdown lead over Ohio State, all the momentum in their way, to things taking a 180. After Jack Allen got called for that holding call, fourth down ensued, and Michael Geiger took the field and missed a field goal. To the left, Michael Geiger, another guy who hasn't been having a great year. But when he missed that field goal, it was a golden opportunity for Michigan State to put a stamp on the game and to be in complete control. Michael Geiger misses the field goal. JT Barrett and that Ohio State offense take the field. And then what happens? A 79-yard touchdown throw. Can you believe that? Right when that happened, right when Michigan State seemed to have Ohio State in its grasp, that moment happened. And it seemed to be a downward trend ever since that play right there. Another puzzling aspect for me in this game had to do with Michigan State's offense. Now, again, I just mentioned Jeremy Langford. Jeremy Langford has been fantastic all year. If there's one guy, you know, you point at and say, man, the Spartans aren't losing because of him, it's Jeremy Langford. He actually had 137 yards and 3 touchdowns on 18 carries. Again, 137 yards, 3 TDs and 18 carries. That is insane, folks. That actually gave him 100-plus yards in 13 straight games against Big Ten teams. The man is on a roll. The man cannot be stopped, and he could not be stopped by that Buckeye defense. It was puzzling and head-scratching to me why Michigan State went away from the run game in that second half. Now, of course, Dave Warner and Pat Narduzzi addressed the media after that game, and Dave cited the fact that, you know, since Michigan State was playing from behind throughout most of that second half, yeah, they wanted to, you know, harp on the pass game a little bit, let it fly. Let it fly from Connor Cook to his receivers. But, again, in a game like this, you cannot abandon what you do best. If it ain't broke, don't fix it. And Michigan State tried to fix it. And ideally, you know, maybe that was a moment of panic here. You know, you're down to Ohio State in the second half. Big game on the line. You want to try something different. They went away from the game plan, if you ask me. Thought they should have ran the ball with Jeremy Langford more. Connor Cook. Cook, 25 of 45. Folks, that's a 55% completion rating right there. Cook is a guy who also had a target on his back coming to this game because Cook has been relatively great. He's been awesome this entire year. Arguably, the best quarterback up into this game, with looking as though how JT Barrett has been playing. But Connor Cook has been having this MSU offense rolling on all cylinders. A juggernaut type of offense. Tony Lippett, a finalist for the Biletnikoff Award, goes to the top receiver in the nation. Tony Lippett has been balling coming into this game. But, again, hey, you got to give credit to Ohio State's defense. You got to give credit to them. They made stops when they needed stops. They gave Cook and company trouble. Other than Kings and Price, McGarrett Kings, who seems to have big games all the time against Ohio State, he had 79 yards. His longest reception was 18 yards. If you remember Josiah Price, who scored on a touchdown, he went for 72 yards. His longest was 20 yards. So Josiah Price and McGarrett Kings, great game, solid games as far as the receiving core goes. But again, your top receiver, Tony Lippett was relatively silent. He was Casper the Friendly Ghost for most of that game. Now, how this team rebounds and what they play for now, that's a whole other discussion in itself. I now invite Alex Sharp to join me on this debate. Alex is also at the game. Alex, my man, how you doing, brother? Happy Monday.
Happy Monday, man. Good hearing you break some of those statistics down. My preface to this Ohio State loss is the expectations were very high for Michigan State fans, and surprisingly, those expectations led to a lot of chit-chat about the student section.
Oh, boy, I read about that this morning. Like, are we back on that?
we'll break each part down, but the student section, it broke chatter about if this season is a success or is it a complete failure. It also broke down expectations of, with all the scouts scattered across the press box, who's going to come back next year and who isn't. So for me, those are the three takeaways from the Ohio State loss on Saturday. Starting with the student section, Al, with, you know, they were down, what was it, I think it was 49-30 when they started leading.
Yeah.
And you start seeing a lot of stuff on Twitter. You saw the Kyler Ellsworth tweets. You see a lot of fan tweets. And I think Kyler Ellsworth, and Al, you did see the Kyler Ellsworth tweets?
I did see the Kyler Ellsworth tweets, yes. Yep.
So
I hate our student section.
Yeah. I feel that, and it's not like this is the first time that players or fans have expressed concern with the student section. But I feel that with Ellsworth and some of the other players and maybe D'Antonio, when he spoke out to the student section, when Calhoun told you, Al, specifically about what he wants for the student section, I feel that they sense that there is a fair-weatherness from the fans, especially after the Ohio State game. The fact that students started to pile out in the fourth quarter with 10 minutes to go, you could see some people leaving. The top section was starting to trickle down. But with 10 minutes to go in the fourth, it's almost as if the players don't feel the fans have faith for any kind of comeback or just faith regardless if a win or loss. That's kind of what I took away from the tweets and from some of the players leading up to this point.
Yeah, and I think when looking at that aspect of things, other than away from the game, I think the fans are just kind of frustrated. You know, that's not, you know, to warrant them leaving the game. If I'm in the student section watching that game, I felt as though Michigan State, I mean, they were in the game still. They were certainly in the game still. Who knows what could have happened? It's college football, for goodness sake. We're seeing crazy things happen. I think it came so more from a standpoint of, okay, this game has certainly been the most hyped game this entire year for the Michigan State football team. You have everybody and their mama, including my own mama, picking the Spartans to win this game. You had College Game Day and ESPN's First Take on campus. Even all of them picked the Spartans to win this game. And then to see what took place throughout that game, as a student, as a fan, frustration sets in at that point. But it comes down to loyalty. It comes down to loyalty. You know, I personally was a bit shocked. I was a bit shocked to see how early fans were leaving that game. Because I felt as though, you know, such a big game on the primetime stage and the hype that surrounded this one, I thought to myself, there's no way that fans are going to leave this one. There's no way we're going to see Nebraska Part 2 here. But, you know, to each his own, and that happens. I even saw an article on Facebook, actually, about maybe Mark Hollis putting heaters in the student section to keep them there longer. I think that would be kind of cool. But who knows? You know Mark Hollis is going to go to work this offseason and try and figure out how do we keep our students in the student section. But, you know, and now going back to Michigan State's football team, though, Alex,
You know, this is it's so weird and quasi now for me because I think this is a team who ideally, you know, had high expectations, playoff expectations here. Possibilities were through the roof for this game. And, you know, and that's one of the biggest things I wanted to harp on when talking with the players after this one. I mean, this one is going to have to sting for a while. You know, looking at the implications this game could have had. And, of course, they gave, you know, the usual. Don't even get me started. I think it was Jeremy Langford and Jack Conklin, who we talked to before we got to Travis Jackson and Tony Lippett. And they gave the cliche, oh, we're fine. We're rebound. We'll be fine. And you could tell on their face that, yeah, they were ticked off. They were clearly upset. They knew how big this moment was. They knew that they had this game, you know, and they didn't perform to Spartan expectations. So then I go to Tony Lippett and I go to Travis Jackson, and those were two that just kind of just said, yeah, this is going to hurt. This is going to hurt for a while. Tony was straight up honest with me. And, you know, and even Travis Jackson, you know, and even to a degree, Travis gave me the cliche, yeah, you know, huh? You know, hey, we lost this one, but you got to move on. Simple as that. But he kind of gave me a little bit of emotion in his response. But this has got to hurt.
It's got to hurt.
It's got
to
hurt.
It has to hurt. But here's what I think that a lot of fans that are still hurting from this game, even around campus today, there's a sense of just downness on campus. People are down.
Oh, yeah.
Right now.
I mean, just a minute ago, we had our intern Alyssa. I could just tell she was just so frustrated.
Yeah.
You know, she plopped down and was like, man, Monday, you know, if the Spartans would have won, it would have been a totally different move, maybe.
If. But here at the end of the day, leaning into our caller right now, here's what you have to look at if you're a Spartan fan. If you go 11-2, you finish out the season, you're still playing. Yeah, you're not playing in the Power Four.
Alex, the season's a failure.
But here's the thing,
Alex. The season is a failure.
You're playing for the Big Ten Conference.
Alex, the season is a failure now because they're not going to Indy. Big Ten Championship is out the window. That's the goal first. That's the first goal that D'Antonio says.
That's where you have it twisted, is that although they're not going to the Big Ten Championship.
They're playing for a high-tier bowl.
I know. But they still have the opportunity to play in a top 10 team bowl.
Alex, who cares?
They could play against an SEC team.
Who cares about that?
I think Michigan State does.
For the expectations this team had this season, Michigan State's expectation is to win a Big Ten championship every year now, especially with the squad they have. The D'Antonio era has shifted now. They're expected to at least get there. And for them to not get there now, yes, it is a disappointment. It is a failure. Let's go to our caller right now on line one. Tom from Grand Rapids is on Current Sports. How you doing, my man, Tom?
Hey, I'm all right. I recovered from Saturday night.
All right, that's good. Quick recovery for Tom.
There you go. But I'll tell you what. You know what? I can't deal with Alex. He's banging on the student section. Can we get over that? Mm-hmm. I mean, when we stop scheduling games at 8 o'clock at night. I mean, I don't know about anybody else, but I got home at 2:30 in the morning from that game.
Right.
And I I'm an hour away. So you know what? That's stupid. That is just stupid. A November game. I mean, it was cold, and the performance looked like. I mean, it was just, we got exposed big time.
Right, right.
And I said to friends leading up to this game, you know, I've been hard on them, and I ain't been on the bandwagon, and maybe that's me. Maybe I need to change. So, okay, I was good with it. But guess what? I saw it all right before my eyes.
Right, exactly. No, that's true. And that's the thing I bring up too, Alex, when we had this debate. Tom, you know, for me, when looking at the student section, and I'm not going to harp on this too much because I feel as though it's kind of a waste of time in my opinion. But just to give my thoughts on it, when that first moment happened, where you had the disappointment about the Spartan student section leaving early, again, Tom, you talk about it's cold outside, and in a Nebraska game, a lot of fans felt as though the Spartans had it in a bag. It's a Saturday night. How can you expect students to stay? How can you expect them to stay? It's unfair to say that. Now, again, looking at Saturday's game, it's a cold game. The Spartans are pretty much out of it. It's kind of getting out of a rye. Hey, it was surprising for me because I felt as though the hype that surrounded this game was so big. I'm like, oh, man, they're not leaving this time. But if they leave, I mean, I don't see what the big deal is. I don't know. Maybe I'm ignorant to it. But, hey, I that's just my thoughts on it, Tom.
No, I totally agree with you, Al. You're spot on. And, you know, and somebody called in a while back, and I heard this call about, you know, the fact that kids want to be able to use their phones and get an internet connection and do all that. You can't do none of that in that state. Mm-hmm. So, you know, you're kind of, if you're going to make it a student event, then make it a student event. Stop some of the old tired stuff. I mean, when we're doing that drumline thing, and I don't know who's all into that, but they were chanting O-H-I-O over the top of the drumline. So what difference did it make?
Mm-hmm.
But, you know, if, I don't know. It's just like you got to make a decision. There's old people like me there. There's students there. You got to have that happy medium. And I don't know, when the game turns south like that, or even if we're putting a whooping on somebody, it's time to go.
Right. Yep.
I mean, that's just the way it is. Welcome to big-time football. But, Al, really, the other side of this, you're right on, man. It's over.
Right. I mean, it is.
You ain't going to the championship game. You're now playing for some secondary bowl. Who gives a crap if it's picked by the college football playoff group or if you just fall yourself into wherever you are? It's over.
Yep, I agree. Hey, Tom.
I'll let you.
Thank you for the call. Appreciate it, my man. No, that's.
You're welcome. Good day.
Yeah, thank you. And I have to agree with Tom, man. I got to agree with him, Alex. I feel as though, you know, looking at the hype surrounding around this season, I think time is dead on, because when you go, when your goal is sort of just kind of snatched away in one moment, in one game like this, it's a wrap. It's like, okay, you kind of have to shift your mindset and say, okay, what are we playing for now? Of course, Michigan State is going to find some motivation out of this season. And what I love about what D'Antonio said in his presser, and this is why D'Antonio is one of my favorite coaches to cover, maybe my favorite coach to cover. D'Antonio is real, and he's a glass half full type of guy. And what he said was, yeah, this is disappointing for us. But isn't life disappointing? Because that's what you have to look at. When you talk about coaching young men who are in college, who are, you know, not all of them are going to go to the NFL and enjoy the dream of making millions of dollars playing professionally. You know, the game of football in the NFL, they're going to go and have to deal with life. They're going to have to go get a degree. They're going to have to go out there and put their nose to the grindstone. And D'Antonio knows that, and he went in there and said, hey, this is a perfect life lesson for everybody in here. In life, you sometimes have goals and expectations, and you're going to fall short sometimes. But how you respond and pick yourself up says a lot about your character. As far as the X's and goals go, yeah, this season is a failure. But as far as life goes, this season could teach a lot of those players in those locker room the game of life and how it is. I love this message. But, yeah, I definitely agree with him. Alex, before we hit break, any final thoughts before we hit the first break?
I mean, good points here, but I want to bring up two things before we hit to break. First of all, yeah, they're not going to get to the Big Ten championship most likely.
No, they're done. They're not getting to Indy.
Well,
they're done.
If Ohio State lost.
There's no way. There's no way that's happening, Alex.
Right. It's unlikely. That's what I said.
It is 120% unlikely.
Hey, go ahead. It would be funny if they did lose.
Not happening.
But as much as the season's over and you're saying, yeah, it's a failure, I will go on to argue that they still are playing for something. Do you remember when they lost to Georgia? They put up 40 points against Georgia years ago. What was that, the Outback Bowl when they played Georgia? They were playing for something that year. You know what they're playing for? They're playing as a Big Ten team, the conference that won't get any love from any BCS, odds maker, you know, the selection committee. The Big Ten never gets any love. You come on the air,
Alex,
and say it all the time.
Alex, what is Michigan State playing
for? What I'm saying is most likely, yeah, they're not going to play in the Power Four, but they're still going to go to a good bowl. It's not like they're going to the Motor City Bowl
but
here.
Alex, how
they're
much?
They're going to play a good team. Probably an SEC team in some kind of bowl.
Alex, but who cares? That's the main thing.
Michigan State cares?
That is the main thing here. Who cares?
The players and the team cares.
When you talk about an opportunity to change the perception of what the Big Ten is, Michigan State had that shot. They had that shot against Oregon. What happened in that game? They had a golden opportunity here to prove that against Ohio State and to possibly go to Indy and have a shot at that playoff. That's gone now. To play in a quote-unquote top-tier bowl game other than the playoff now, it's not what Michigan State was striving to do this year.
It's not what they're striving. Yeah,
expectations,
I agree.
The expectations were higher than that, Alex, and those expectations have now went out the window. What they're playing for now has really, it's a huge contrast to what they could have been playing for. Ideally, and with that being said, ideally to put in perspective, this season is a failure in that regard, Alex.
In that regard, yeah, they didn't reach their main goal. But I'd still say they've met a lot of other goals this year. And back to the students real quick before we get off the air. I mean, I see what you're saying.
Go back to them.
Who cares with the students? It was cold in November. But look, remember last year when Tom Izzo had to go out to the student section and ask them to leave? The students wouldn't leave with dangerous weather,
Alex, that was,
in a rainstorm.
That's a totally different situation.
But what I'm saying is you're in Michigan. You go to Michigan. It's not like you're in Gainesville here and you're not used to the cold. The students know what they're used to. If Mark Hollis is talking about putting heaters in the student section, you don't think that the students leaving early isn't a concern here? There's some chatter. It's definitely a concern.
Alex,
so you can't go on here with Tom and say, hey, forget the students.
It is minuscule. It is minuscule. It's an athletic director problem, yes. It is definitely a Mark Hollis problem here. Mark Hollis has to figure out how to keep students in the game because it doesn't look good if that camera's rolling around in the late fourth quarter and they look at the student section and say, oh my goodness, the Spartan fans are gone. Kurt Herbstreit mentioned it on national TV. He's like, oh man, the student section is kind of thin here. Yeah, it looks bad from a perception standpoint. But I just feel as though this story is getting so blown out of proportion. Too blown out of proportion. If a student has their season tickets and they want to leave a game because for whatever reason it is, I don't even care what the reason is. They can do whatever they want. Point blank, period. I'm tired of talking about the student. Let's hit the first break. When we come back, again, we'll be taking your calls, 517-355-9527. You want to call in and give your thoughts just like Tom just did, 517-355-9527. We'll also talk about those comeback kids, the Detroit Lions, and so much more. Do not touch that dial. By now, you should have somehow realized what you got to do. Welcome back to Current Sports. I am your host, Al Martin, on this Monday, November 10th. Hopefully you guys are having a great start to your week. Can't believe it's already Monday. That weekend kind of flew by. And again, many of you are still down and out about that Michigan State-Ohio State game as the Spartans fell to the Buckeyes. And that went a tough loss. We're taking your calls throughout this entire hour if you want to call in and give your thoughts on that game. 517-355-9527, 517-355-9527. Certainly a disappointment. We've had one caller, Tom, who gave some pretty interesting insight, and somehow the student section has crept up in our discussion once again. Now Jock DeWitt joins us, of course, our fantastic intern and Detroit Lions expert as well. I like to dub him as. Jock, how you doing, my man?
Doing great. How you doing, Al?
I'm doing fantastic. First off, before we dive into your Honolulu Blue, and you're doing a great job of rocking them today. You got the Ndamukong Suh jersey on, the backwards Detroit Lions hat. I gotta love it, man. But really quickly, your thoughts on the Michigan State OSU game, and even the comments about the student section. Why not? Because you're a student, you have a hands-on perspective, if you will, of this. But what are your thoughts on MSU and OSU?
Well, in terms of the student section, I have season tickets, but I've actually sold them the last few games so I could watch them at home because I feel like the student section is not focused on the game. It's about doing the cheers and getting drunk before the game and leaving early.
That's what the student section ideally is about, though, right? I mean, the cheers and whatnot. I know for you being an X's and O's type of guy, you like to see the game, though. So I guess it's different. It's a difference for everybody. But yeah, but for you, so you've gotten rid of yours for the entire year.
Yeah, for the most part. But I mean, you know, if you buy the tickets, you should be able to do whatever you want with them. But it's just I agree that I would like to see the stands filled the entire game. So I'm gonna agree with what Alex said. You know, I don't know if it's a problem per se, but it looks better, and the players appreciate it, and the coaches appreciate it if you stay the whole game.
Folks, what do you guys think about this 517? I can't believe I'm opening up the lines to do this once again, but 517-355. If you want to call about the student section, give your thoughts on it, 517-355-9527. So, again, now looking at Michigan State's season now, of course, they go on the road to take on Maryland. That's another night game, 8 p.m. on the road, Maryland, a game that, of course, Maryland is certainly going to get up for. They've actually started a certain trend or saying, blackout Sparty. I believe that's the trend that Maryland is rolling with now. This game is huge for them, an opportunity to take out, of course, the defending Rose Bowl champions. Again, the question is, what are the Spartans playing for now? I got that question, of course, this morning as I was a guest on Current State, our show, our great news show every morning from 9 to 10 a.m. I was on the air with Mark Bayshore. And now, again, you know, ideally Michigan State's playing for some sort of top-tier bowl, whether it be, what, the Totillos Fiesta Bowl, Cotton Bowl, who knows. But that's what the Spartans are playing for. Again, you play Maryland on Saturday on the road, then they return home against Rutgers, and they finish up the year on the road Saturday, November 29th at Penn State. So I think this team will rebound. I think I'm calling all three of those games dubs right now. I think the Spartans, historically, when they've had a big loss in the D'Antonio era, no matter what that game has been, Michigan State has always responded. Michigan State has brought their A game the very next week, and ideally, you know, to finish out that year. So I'm expecting Michigan State to come back and pounce on Maryland, Rutgers, and Penn State. I think that is happening. I think that's going to happen. Now, I do think, you know, the people who have the biggest chip on their shoulder when you look at this personnel happens to be at Michigan State defense, because I think that Michigan State defense took a straight-up right hook to the jaw. Right hook to the jaw, folks. This Michigan State defense, again, has been known to be one of the best in the nation. They got exposed, point blank period. They got exposed in every which way you want to call it on Saturday night. How they rebound is going to be key. I think they do. We have a caller on line two. Mark from Lansing, you're on Current Sports. How you doing, Mark?
I'm doing good, Al. Just wanted to respond to a couple points. Starting with your, are you there, Al?
Yeah, I'm here. Yep. Are you here?
Oh, okay.
Gotcha.
Yep. I'm here. All right. Yeah, your last point about the Michigan State defense, yeah, I think they really missed Darquez Denard, maybe Isaiah Lewis, definitely missed DeNico Salen,
yeah,
and Max Bulla. I don't know if they missed the tackles, Hoover and Makaija Reynolds. Maybe they do. But the defense is, you know, it's not where it was last year by any means, and really there was red flags. There has been red flags all year long, not just against Ohio State, although, you know, we really saw how much you know, a team with a dual threat quarterback can really hurt Michigan State.
Mm-hmm.
So, you know, the defense is not the same. But, you know, to the other point and what Tom was talking about, yeah, this season they wanted to get to the national championship, but there's only one team that's going to win that national championship. So, you know, all the teams that don't get there aren't necessarily failures. With Michigan State, is what they have to do is they have to look at, hey, we can get to 10-2. They're trying to build the long-term future with recruiting. And so with a 10-2 season, if they get there, which is no guarantee, that's a heck of a step following up to a win. So, mm-hmm. You know, I think this year can really be, can finish strong. You know, Ohio State's going to be great for years. And so, I mean, they've got a young team with a stud quarterback, but you know, Michigan State, you know, has just got to try and keep going, win games, and recruits will look more and more at Michigan State. So that's what they have to shoot for.
Yeah, that's true. You got to look at this from a Michigan State coaching and player standpoint. I mean, you got to brush it off, which is hard to do, but you got to brush it off. And again, look at the glasses half full, and those are the things you shoot for. That's very very good way to put that in perspective, Mark. Appreciate that.
All right, thanks, Al.
Thank you. Yeah, and that's what it comes down to now. I mean, you know, you got to look at the positive aspects now. You know, again, you can't turn back the hands of time. You know, it's done. The game is in the books. What do you play for now? What do you want this program to be remembered as when the 2000, you know, when years down the line, when people look at the 2014-15 Spartans, what would that memory be? You etch it in the stone now, and you can only take it game by game now. Again, folks, if you want to call in, just like Mark and Tom have done, 517-355-9527, 517-355-9527. We'll be taking your calls all the way up until 2 o'clock, 15 minutes left in the show. We'll take them live on the air. To shift gears right now, I want to talk about the Honolulu Blue, the Detroit Lions, folks. Let's change the mood from somber to rejoiceful. As the Detroit Lions, I tell you what, there's a culture change happening with that ball club. The Lions completed their third consecutive fourth quarter comeback on Sunday, edging the Miami Dolphins 20-16. And with 29 seconds left in the game, Matthew Stafford found Theo Riddick on an 11-yard touchdown pass to put the Lions on top for good. Calvin Johnson, Megatron, made his return yesterday in Golden Tate. He turned heads like he has been doing all year. Both surpassed 100 receiving yards in yesterday's matchup. Jock, first off, I got to say, man, my goodness. I mean, the Lions, I've just about had a heart attack these past 3 weeks watching this team as it is as each one of those games have boiled down to the final seconds. Matthew Stafford is so clutch. I mean, Matthew Stafford can look iffy throughout the first three quarters of the game, but all of a sudden, when the game is on the line and he needs to make a big play or have a big drive or drives, Matthew Stafford has gotten the job done. I can't argue with the results. Again, the past three victories have been by a combined 6 points. 6 points is what we're talking about here, folks. 6 points is what separates a 7-2 year to being a completely different vibe and feel, folks. That's all we're talking about here. All fourth quarter comebacks. Now, for me, you know, looking at that key drive, Jack, as it came down to the nitty-gritty, with 3:13 left in the game, Stafford completed his first five passes of the drive before a third down ensued from the Miami 27-yard line. Of course, Megatron was a big part of that. Golden Tate was a big part of that drive as well. I mean, it is so impressive to see how, you know, when the clock is winding down, how poised and confident Matthew Stafford is. And it's almost like he wakes up and says, man, I got a lot of toys to play with on this offense. Let me start using them. It's impressive, man. What are your thoughts on it?
It's good to see, you know, how he performs on the last drive of the game when they need it the most. You know, aside from that year that they went 10-6 before losing to New Orleans in the playoffs, he's been on some teams that, you know, he hasn't really performed his first few years in the league. So this year is just, he's taken such a big step in the offseason. But getting Golden Tate, I mean, oh my gosh, they got a steal for that guy, man. So
arguably the best free agent acquisition this entire year in the NFL. It's unbelievable.
Definitely. And you combine that with Calvin Johnson, even when they have their two top tight ends out, Pettigrew got hurt again.
Yep.
He's finding guys like Theo Riddick to win games. You know, he's completing passes to Jeremy Ross in the last drive. It's a good thing to see how well he's played on the last drive these past few games.
And I tell you what, the throw to Theo Riddick was so impressive. On the run, turning his body opposite way, and just kind of flicks it. That sidearm, Matthew Stafford flick of the wrist. And to find him, when he was covered, Theo Riddick was covered, but he found a tight window. Oh, man, I almost lost my mind watching that game. But yeah, Megatron, you know, with his return, I mean, it's almost like having to create a player from Madden on your team. Megatron, 7 receptions, 113 yards, 1 touchdown. He is such a difference maker when Stafford needs a play. But he's not only the only receiver here, as Jock, you alluded to. Golden Tate, 11 receptions, 109 yards. He continues to put up just redonkulous numbers all year. Now, for me, there were also a few moments in this game that proved to be key points to look at as well. Not only the final drive for the Lions. Of course, that's the more memorable moment because that's how the Lions eventually won this game. But how about James Ihedigbo? I mean, he's unbelievable. I mean, that interception in the second quarter, he reads Tannehill to the T. He jumps the route, takes it all the way back. Of course, Tannehill, ends up tackling him. But, man, unbelievable moment there. And then there was also a key moment when the Dolphins could have extended their lead. And if you remember, it's 4:30 left in the game, fourth quarter. James, it's almost like, I forget the receiver who had the ball, but he catches it. And then James comes out of nowhere and just punches it right out of his hands, saves a touchdown, and gives the Lions some new life there. I thought, for me, even though Calvin, you the man, you know, Matthew Stafford, you're that guy. Golden Tate, hats off to you. But James Ihedigbo did the little things that the Lions needed to put them in position to win that game as well.
Yeah, he did, Alan. Actually, my position analysis after yesterday's game, that was my MVP. It wasn't Stafford, it wasn't Johnson or Tate or Riddick.
Yeah.
It was James Ihedigbo. So, you know, that's just great considering that he's probably the second best safety on the team. You know, Glover Quinn is outstanding.
Yeah.
But yesterday when they needed it, he stepped up big for the Lions.
He was huge, huge. Hats off to James. That was a fantastic outing from him, fantastic performance by that defense. I think the Lions, you know, for me, when looking at how the Lions started this season, and I'm sitting there looking at this defense week after week after week, you know, have big moments, you know, and shutting down teams. And I'm sitting there like, okay, You know, this Lions defense is good, but still, I don't know. I got to see some more games here. This defense is solidifying that it is arguably the best in the league. I think it's solidifying that notion right now. I've been so impressed how even when injuries happen, you know, it doesn't matter who Jim Caldwell calls on, you know, to replace someone, you know, whether it be on the defensive line, whether it be in the secondary, no matter where it is, they're expected. James Caldwell expects them to go out there and perform and to not miss a beat. And it's amazing how guys have, you know, uncharacteristic guys have just come in and stepped up for this Lions defense. And it's like, you know, that guy, that person who was, you know, the star of that position and that you needed for to win games, it's almost like that person, you know, is non-existent. You know, it's like that person has just come in and done their job. It's unbelievable. And there's a culture change happening. Now, again, you guys weren't drinking. You or Alex were drinking the Kool-Aid. You were sipping it. You were sipping it a little bit,
Jack.
I had
to pour it in the glass.
Yeah, you poured it. You didn't even sip. You poured it in the glass. I was guzzling it down. And after the New Orleans game, that was the moment I'm like, I came on the air. You guys probably heard my rant. I'm like, oh, I believe in this team now. There's something going on now here. Are you drinking the Kool-Aid now?
I'm definitely drinking the Kool-Aid. I'm drinking a lot of the Kool-Aid.
You are. And I feel as though, for me, Jim Caldwell is the key to this whole thing. I mean, Jim Caldwell, I mean, you know, just looking at, you know, his comments after the games, you know, we only get, as fans and as media here in Lansing, we only get a small sample size of who Jim Caldwell is based on his post-game pressers, based on what we see on the sidelines and so on and so forth. But what I've seen in those very few moments, Jim Caldwell is all about his business. He has a certain expectation for this team. He expects the Lions to compete for championships. If they're not, that's a problem. I feel as though his aura, you know, you always say that a head coach, well, a team is a reflection of the head coach. This team is taking on a personality of Jim Caldwell, a personality that I haven't seen in this Lions franchise. And I think it's very encouraging. And, you know, Jim Caldwell also showed that he's willing to take a little risk. He's willing to take some risks during games. He had what?
Two fake punts.
Yeah, two fake punt calls. You know, I'm sitting like, oh man, you know, that's and they happen like early in the game. It's not like game on the line here. I mean, he's trying different things. And then you go back to, you know, going for it late in the third quarter when the Lions needed a play. Calvin Johnson makes the most improbable bobble catch in the air to salvage that third, well, that fourth down. And I'm sitting there like, oh my goodness, you gotta be kidding me. They go for it and they get it. Jim Caldwell is the straw that stirs this drink, and it's tasting pretty good right now. Folks, we have about 7 minutes left in the show. If you want to call in and give your thoughts on the Lions, Spartans, or anything on your mind, 517-355-9527, 517-355-9527. So, of course, so much happens throughout the weekend, Jack and Alex, that, you know, it's sort of hard to sort of capitalize everything in an hour-long radio show. So we try to, by bringing a segment we like to dub Weekend Winners. Alex, do we have our music queued up? It's time for Weekend Winners, folks. We take a look at the weekend that was in sports and pick and choose who came along as victorious.
This is what's great about sports. This is what the greatest thing about sports is. You play to win the game. Hello? You play to win the game. You don't play to just play it. That's the great thing about sports. You're the best around. Nothing's going to
Yes, these are the best around. Well, at least looking at this past weekend. All right, these are what we like to bring this segment, Weekend Winners. We look at the weekend and sort of pick and choose and you know, kind of go outside the box on who had the best weekend in sports. First, I got to give hats off to the Detroit Lions. Again, they're 7-2. I believe, dating back to the 50s, I had to double check this stat too. Dating all the way back to the 1950s, the Lions have only been 7-2 twice. I couldn't believe that. I said, are you kidding me? And this is one of those moments. If that doesn't put in perspective just how good this Lions team is right now, I don't know what will. We actually had a call right now on line one. Barry from Holt has a question. Oh, we don't have him? We don't have Barry. Oh, Barry, well, thanks a lot for calling, my man. Thanks a lot for calling. We'll try to get Barry on tomorrow, I guess. But yeah, I mean, for me, I'm starting with the Lions here. Also want to segue into the Lakers. Shout out to Kobe and the Lakers. The Lakers, folks, have finally gotten their first win of the season. They have started off pitiful, their worst start, I believe, since the 50s. A lot of 50s references here on Current Sports today. But the Lakers finally getting their first win of the season, a 107-92 win over the Hornets. How about that? And if you guys know, Charles Barkley, is an NBA analyst for TNT. He vowed that he would not eat. He would not eat a meal until the Lakers had won. Well, yeah, I think you can go ahead and put something on the stove now, Charles. So, again, the Lakers getting their first win. Hats off to them. How about this? The Mason Bulldogs, folks. Oh, my goodness. In high school football, local high school football action here, Mason beat the powerhouse that is the DeWitt Panthers 30-14 the final on Friday night. The Bulldogs are on a 7-game win streak. DeWitt had previously defeated the Bulldogs earlier this season 25-10, and Mason comes up with the big upset. My goodness, it was a crazy scene after that one. Rob Zimmerman, oh boy, and this is a team that had expectations of a state championship. Hats off to Mason with the big upset. That's why you play the game. That's why you play the game. Those are my two, or three, I should say, weekend winners. Jack, what are yours?
My weekend winner this week has got to be the Arizona Cardinals. They moved to 8-1, and even though they lost Carson Palmer, Patrick Peterson had two interceptions, and he's going to be key holding down Calvin Johnson or Golden Tate this upcoming Sunday. So it should be a good game, and I think the Cardinals got, you know, they got a big game coming for them. So
yeah, they do. The Cardinals are kind of like a weekend winner and loser, seeing as they lost Carson Palmer. But yeah, that's,
I guess Carson Palmer should be my winner for signing that contract before he got hurt.
That's a great, smart idea, right? Alex, what about you, my man?
Yeah, going off that, and aside from Carson Palmer going down, the big question, it's the front poll question on ESPN. Are the Cardinals still contenders with Drew Stanton at quarterback?
Spartan. So
how about Drew now? He gets to fill in.
Yeah.
Maybe lead a Super Bowl team. We'll see. But no one's really talking about it. But Bubba Watson at the World Championships in Shanghai. Did you see what he did
this weekend? No.
He does an eagle on the 18th hole to go into a playoff. He's down a stroke. Down two strokes. He eagles to go into a playoff with Tim Clark, and then he birdies 18 again to win the World Golf Championship in Shanghai. Phenomenal weekend for Bubba Watson.
Wow, how about that? Bubba, an eagle on the 18th to force a playoff? That's very, very impressive. My goodness. All right, and before we wrap up this segment and wrap up the show, I got to give two weekend losers here. I like going weekend winners and losers. My first loser has to be the Chicago Bears. Oh. That was a waste of my time. The only reason I watched that Packers and Bears game and stuck around as long as I did was because I had Jordy Nelson and Randall Cobb playing on my fantasy team. But the Bears are just having an atrocious season. They lost to the Packers 55-14. Aaron Rodgers was 18 of 27 for 315 yards. My goodness. And also, if you guys watched the Oregon and Utah game, you guys saw a play in which Utah was actually beating Oregon in the game. But Kalen Clay, right receiver for the Utes, he decided to celebrate a little bit prematurely when the Utes were up by 7. Kalen caught it, raced to the end zone, but inexplicably, nonchalantly dropped the ball at the 1-yard line. Now, while Clay and his teammates celebrated their not touchdown, Oregon's Eric Dargan realized what happened, picked up the ball, and took it all the way back to the house, and then that started the demise for Utah. Oh, Kalen, come on, man. Got to be smarter than that, my brother. All right. Well, thanks to all of you for tuning in to today's Current Sports. You've been listening to Current Sports with me, Al Martin, on WKAR AM 870 East Lansing. As always, take care. Have one fantastic Monday and start to your week. Make it a good one, folks and people.